Going to the Jew First. This is the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. And today we'd like to have a special presentation to share with you with Dr. Reynolds Showers, who serves with Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry. Dr. Showers recently spoke at IBJM's annual prophecy conference on the book of Daniel. Now, without further ado, here is Dr. Showers.
The theme of the book of Daniel is the sovereign rule of God. That's the theme of the book of Daniel. And its key verse along those lines is in chapter 4, verse 17. And this is what it says. In order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will. Indicating God is in sovereign control of everything here upon planet Earth. He can raise up rulers, tear down rulers according to his sovereign purposes. The introduction, really, to the whole book is in chapter 1 of Daniel. And we find out that in August of 605 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, who was the crown prince of Babylon, took control of Jerusalem. His father, who was the king of Babylon, died August 1516, when Nebuchadnezzar was there in Jerusalem. As a result of that, Nebuchadnezzar rushed home to claim the throne before some imposter would come in and take it, because he was the crown prince, so the throne was supposed to be his. He took with him some of the cream of the crop of Jewish young men, one of whom was Daniel, and when they got there, they changed their names, and so their Babylonian names for his three friends were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The Hebrew text indicates that these young men were 15 to 20 years of age. That was their age bracket, mainly teenagers that were carried there. And so they were taken captive to Babylon, and they were placed in the royal training school for 3 years of intensive training. God enabled Daniel and his friends through that training program to surpass all the other students. When they came in for their final exam before Nebuchadnezzar, none of the other men measured up to their abilities and their knowledge and all the rest. And as a result, they were advanced to government positions within Nebuchadnezzar's government. That's the introduction to the book of Daniel. Now, the next section of Daniel is really in chapters 2 through 12, the rest of the book. And what's being demonstrated now from chapter 2 through chapter 12 is God's sovereign rule in the kingdom of men. God's sovereign rule in the kingdom of men. That's what's going on in the rest of the book of Daniel. And when we come to chapters 2 through 7 of Daniel, God's sovereign rule over the Gentiles is demonstrated. Then when you get to chapters 8 through 12, it's going to be a sovereign rule over Israel. But in chapters 2 through 7, God's sovereign rule over the Gentiles demonstrated. And so it's God's sovereign rule over Gentile empires demonstrated, again, in chapters 2 through 7. In chapter 2, which again is God in a kind of a nutshell, was going to demonstrate conclusively his sovereign rule over the Gentile empires. When you come to chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream that greatly disturbed him tremendously. He couldn't figure out what it was all about. And that was in 603 BC, according to ancient records. And he demanded that his wise men tell him both the content of the dream as well as the interpretation of the dream. Now, before that, when he had a dream, he called the wise men in. He'd tell them the content and then ask for the interpretation. But apparently he wanted to test them out to make sure that they weren't making up things to make him happy in the interpretation. This time he said, you tell me the content as well as the interpretation of the dream. And the wise men couldn't do either of those things whatsoever, and it was impossible for them. And so they told the king that he was unreasonable to require this. No great ruler had ever demanded such a thing of his wise men. Well, that didn't fit his pride. So in a fit of rage, he ordered all the wise men to be torn apart, literally limb from limb, and all of their houses converted into public restrooms. In light of this, Daniel, because he and his friends were now tied in with the wise men, if they couldn't do this for the king, they were going to be ripped apart as well. And so Daniel requested one of the high officials to go to King Nebuchadnezzar and ask him to grant Daniel a period of time, and by the end of that period of time, Daniel would come and fulfill what the king had demanded. And so the king agreed to that, and so Daniel rushed home, and he and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, had an emergency prayer meeting because their lives were at stake. And they asked God to reveal the dream and the interpretation to Daniel, and that's exactly what God did to Daniel. And so then God, when Daniel came in before Nebuchadnezzar, he said to him that the king had demanded something that was humanly impossible to fulfill, just as his wise men said. But he said that to lay the foundation. Only the God in heaven could do this. Reveal the content and also the interpretation of your dream. Now, one of the reasons he keeps emphasizing the God of heaven is because, according to ancient records, the Babylonians believed that all their gods came from the earth, actually out of a mountain. They believed that all their gods came out of a mountain here upon planet Earth. So Daniel wants to make it very clear. What I'm going to share with you now is from the God of heaven. He wants to drive home to Nebuchadnezzar. There's only one true and living God who actually exists, and that's the God of Israel, the God of heaven. And so in chapter 2, verses 31 to 45, Daniel reveals the content of the dream and begins to interpret it in chapter 2, verses 31 to 45. And there were two major objects in the dream. The first one was a huge image that was human in form. And then the second object in the dream was a stone that we'll talk about later on. When Daniel interprets the image, he starts at the top, at the head, and he progressively works his way down, piece by piece by piece. It's important to note that as he's doing that, he is showing that God is revealing the whole future course of Gentile world dominion from Daniel's day right up until the time that Messiah would come to set up God's kingdom here upon planet Earth. So he starts with the head of gold. And he makes it clear to Nebuchadnezzar, the head of gold represents you as the king of Babylon, but it also represents your Babylonian kingdom. Now what's intriguing is this. God purposely portrayed the Babylonian king with gold for a couple reasons. Number one, according to the Babylonians, their chief god, Marduk, they called the god of gold, the god of gold. In addition, the Babylonians were notorious for using incredible amounts of gold. They made all kind of images out of gold. They even covered whole walls of buildings, even royal palaces, with gold leaf. And so God was very accurately portraying the Babylonian kingdom as the kingdom of gold. That represented the Babylonian kingdom that was the great world power when Daniel was there before King Nebuchadnezzar. But now he moves down to the trunk, or if you want to say the breast, with two arms coming together on each side, and that breast was made out of silver. Now, this was God's way of portraying what the next great Gentile world empire would be that would conquer Babylon and replace Babylon. And the two arms coming together to form one chest equaled two different national groups of people, the Medes and the Persians, the Medes and the Persians. They were separate kingdoms for a period of time, but in the near future, after Daniel being there before Nebuchadnezzar, those two kingdoms were going to merge together to form what became known as the Medo-Persian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire. And so this was God's way of foretelling, first there's going to be Babylon as a great Gentile kingdom, but then the next one after Babylon is going to be the Medo-Persian Empire or kingdom. And why was it represented by silver? Well, according to ancient records, silver, back in those ancient times, represented money. And it's a fact of history. The Medo-Persian kings, they built a tremendous highway system throughout their massive kingdom. And the main reason they did that was so that the tax collectors could get out through every nook and cranny of that kingdom and get the taxes that the Medo-Persian emperors were demanding of their people to pay. And so God, for that reason, was telling very accurately the second great kingdom would be one that has a great emphasis upon money, and so use silver to represent that. That part of the dream was fulfilled in 539 BC because in 539 BC, as we'll see later on, Medo-Persia conquered Babylon and now assimilated Babylon into its growing, massive Medo-Persian kingdom there in that part of the world. Now, Daniel, as he's moving down on the figure here, the statue, comes to the belly and thighs that are made out of bronze. The belly and thighs that are made out of bronze. And that the belly represented Greece. See, it's one belly, not two divisions of the belly. One belly, that represented Greece, which would be the next great Gentile world empire, unified under Alexander the Great, And the two thighs, why one belly but then two thighs? As you may know, Alexander the Great, just within about 3 or 4 years after he conquered with his Greek troops this massive Medo-Persian empire, Alexander died very quickly. He was about 33 years of age when he died out there. There wasn't another man within the Grecian kingdom of the ability to exercise rule and organize things as Alexander the Great. And because there was no man within the Grecian kingdom to replace him, his four leading generals subdivided the big Grecian kingdom into four divisions. However, only two of those divisions ended up having any significance in history beyond the time when they conquered Medo-Persia. And one of those divisions was headquartered in Egypt, south of Israel. The other of the significant of the four divisions was Syria, directly north of Israel. Same nation of Egypt and Syria we hear about in the news today at this particular time. And so since God knew only two divisions of the four those generals would subdivide Alexander's Grecian kingdom would be significant, God very accurately ahead of time portrayed the one belly under Alexander's rule, but then the two major divisions that would have great significance after Alexander the Great would die there in that part of the world. Then, as Daniel's going down on the image, he comes to the legs of iron. And then feet and toes, a mixture of iron and clay. The two legs are representing the next great Gentile kingdom or empire that would develop after Greece. And we know historically that was Rome. In fact, the Romans conquered the Grecian kingdom in 146 BC. Now, those areas of the ancient world were under Roman rule. But why two legs for the ancient Roman Empire? Well, by the 300s AD, when Emperor Constantine was the emperor, the Roman Empire was so expansive, all of Western Europe, all of Eastern Europe as well, that it was almost impossible to exercise effective rule over those massive areas. So Constantine decided to divide the ancient Roman Empire into two parts. The Western Empire in Western Europe had the city of Rome as its capital city. But then the eastern half, which today would be Turkey, where Turkey is located today, Constantine had a new capital city built for the eastern half and called it Constantinople, after Emperor Constantine. And so God knew ahead of time that's what was going to happen when the Roman Empire came to its largest expanse. It would be subdivided into two divisions there. But why iron in those legs? Well, the implication is that iron is very strong. By the way, the Greeks, the belly and thighs, were represented by bronze, and the Greeks were the ones who really developed bronze extensively for their military hardware. But now, when Rome came into power, they developed iron, which was much stronger than bronze, could penetrate through the Greek shields of bronze and everything else. And God knew that, so he portrays it in the form of iron with tremendous power and destructive power. And that Rome could crush and shatter the ancient world is what God was saying when it would come into power. Again, 146 BC, it conquered the Grecian kingdom.
You've been listening to a special presentation of Dr. Randall Showers on the Book of Daniel here on the Everlasting Nation broadcast. We invite you to come tomorrow as we resume our study on the Book of Daniel with Dr. Showers. For more information, you can contact us here at IBJM at 423 866-8150, or you can go online to ibjm.org for more information. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.